on a Tuesday. I am at the residence of Jack E. Jensen, former proprietor of the Livermore Plumbing and Sheet Metal Works. And today I will sit down and have a little chat with Mr. Jensen. This is Huff Deck, or Richard M. Deck, of Livermore, and I have been a friend of Jack's for at least 63 years. Jack, for information purposes, tell me about what year or and about what age you were when you came to Livermore, and then I'm going to ask you a few other questions, and I'm sure that you can give us a complete resume of the whole thing. Thank you. Jack, well, when did you come to Livermore?
I first came here in 98 during the Spanish-American War. I was just a little squirt then. I visited my uncle Norman Jensen, who was farming the ranch that is now owned by Alban Jensen.
And then?
That was just a visit. Then afterwards, in 1905, I came up to help N.D. Dutcher doing sheet metal work. And this was for a short time only. I was a relief man from Hayward, from Bruner's sheet metal shop. And I came up again in 1906, after the quake, and was here for about, 6 months. And then I went away. I was away from here for quite a few years. In the meantime, I worked a couple of years on the river as an engineer on a river boat. And then I came back here to Livermore while they were building the Western Pacific. In 1907 and 8, I was here. And then I came back here permanently at the time the fuse works came, the same time they were building the original fuse works when I came here. And I've been here ever since that. I've never left.
Well, that's great, Jack. That puts you, or classifies you, as an old-timer in Livermore.
Wouldn't be a spring chicken.
In fact, I don't think there's many people in Livermore that can lay claim to any more years here than you. Now, Jack, tell me about the Carnegie Building, the old Livermore Library,
well,
as we remember.
Livermore Library, that block originally, years ago, was the slaughter yard for Pete McKinney, the butcher. He was the only butcher in Livermore at that time. And it was used as a slaughter yard. Then I don't know who purchased it, or the city, most of it, I guess, and the Carnegie Library was built. I saw the building built, different operations there, but I had no part in that. But afterwards, after it was built, I installed a furnace in the thing, to the heating system. Whether that's still there or not, I don't know. And several times I did small repairs over there.
Tell me, Jack, wasn't there a meeting hall in the basement of that library?
Yeah. At one time, I think the Ladies Improvement Club or something met down there downstairs. I know we did some work down there. We put in, I believe it was a water heater or something for the ladies that do their cooking and stuff like that. That was done later on, you know. Yeah, I think it was a ladies' aid or something. It was a ladies' outfit.
Was the Carnegie Building always landscaped as it is now?
Yeah, always the same. The trees and stuff changed a little bit, but the filling of the dirt and that was always the same. Yeah.
And has there been any major repair to the Carnegie Building?
Well, I think they've had trouble with the roof. That's probably been repaired. But otherwise, I don't think it would be anything that would need it. That's a pretty well-built building.
So then you're saying most of the woodwork and all the old furnishings that are in there are most likely the furnishings
the
of the original,
yeah, I would think so.
Library.
Yeah.
The outside of the building, is it was the same thing? Never any changes?
No changes.
Do you remember when the fountain was put in?
No, but that was put in afterwards. And I remember they had a lot of goldfish in there one time, and some Bishop's kids put some kind of detergent or something in and killed all the fish.
Do you remember any other pertinent things about the Carnegie Building? What part did Mr. Carnegie play in that? Do you know?
Well, I think he financed the thing. I think he put up the money to build that building. They must have old records of that here someplace.
And it was primarily built as a library.
As a library.
As the original library in Livermore.
Original library. And I was reading the old original library they had here in Livermore. I don't remember just where it's at. Myrtle Hart was the librarian. And the first set of books they had were donated to the library by the Odd Fellows Lodge of Oakland. They had a library that was abandoning it, and they gave them books to the library here.
Well, that's very interesting. Do you recall? Well, I'll tell you. Let's branch off into something else now,
okay. And
then if you recall anything of the library, just come on back and put it in the statement here. You mentioned to me the other day about the flagpole in Livermore. Give me a rundown on that.
Well, if you old timers will remember, and these later people, that Mate Henry used to have an article in his Livermore Herald that said, "You are an old timer if you remember when." And then it would mention something that would happen. Well, I read that one about the flagpole. And I went right down the next morning and says, "Mate, I got you beat. I saw that flagpole hold up through the Dillon Canyon by David Ellett McDonald on two lumber wagons and a bunch of mules."
Through which canyon was that?
Dublin.
Through the Dublin Canyon.
Dublin Canyon, yeah.
It was hauled up on wagons and mules.
Yeah, mules. And they'd right where we lived, there was a very sharp turn in the road, and they had to shift the gears so they could make the turn. They're the ones that put Alec and Dave McDonald in the bed.
Do you remember how tall the flagpole, the original flagpole, was?
No, I don't remember. I know it's been shortened.
Well, you mentioned something about the top of the flagpole and Kincannon's Corner.
If you're out at Kincannon's Corner and put a section there, a surveyor's instrument, and sight down here, you'll get the top of the flagpole.
That was the old flagpole?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the flagpole has been moved.
It's shorter, because we tried that out one day, Jack and I were with a section. We heard that, so we tried it.
Mm-hmm.
It was true. But you wouldn't think there was that much fall between there and here, but there is.
Well, that flagpole must be over 100 feet tall.
Oh yeah. And the first time it was erected, it was put up. There was a big celebration, and the fellow that raised that up was Charlie Lefevre. He afterwards was Tom Marshall here. Lefevre was originally an oil well man, oil digger, so he knew how to put that pole up. When they got the pole, the natives didn't know how to put it up. But Lefevre put it up. And when it was changed by Dietz from Pleasant, it was hoist, he changed it. But that was a big celebration when they put that pole up. I've seen pictures of it, and I've seen them paint that several times. See a man up there, painting that?
Okay, now, Jack, when I was talking to you the other day, you mentioned something about the first railroads through Livermore here.
Well, the first railroad, I wouldn't know anything about the first railroad, but I know I seen the first Western Pacific go through here. I watched them do all the cuts up in the Altamont Hills. It was all done with mules and manual labor and wagons. They didn't have any equipment like they have now. And the main construction camp was right out where Trevarno is now. Palmer and McBride had a big camp out there. The repair shop was there, and all the mules were kept out there.
And they had hundreds of mules, didn't they?
Hundreds of mules, yeah. And all they had, these laborers coming from this Murray and Reddy labor outfit, in San Francisco. That's where you got all the laborers. There was a string going, a string coming, and a string on the way, because they'd work about 2 days, and they'd quit. Yeah, there was a lot of bones or something looking more than doing that at that time.
And in those days, didn't they have a lot of Chinese? Didn't they have a lot of Chinese help on the railroad?
Chilenos. We call them Chilenos. I don't guess where they come from, because they used to get in the fight. I know they had a camp up near Midway someplace. Every once in a while, they'd bring a guy in. I seen them bring one in. Guy, it was carved. His cheek was old. You could see his teeth. Knife fights, But they were Chilenos they had there.
Oh, Chilenos.
Yeah.
That was,
I don't know if they were Mexicans or Mexicans. We call them Chilenos.
Chilenos,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you also mentioned something about a very prominent restaurant here in Livermore. Can you tell me who run that?
That was run by the Malley family. And there was old Papa Malley, there was Mrs. Malley, there was Tilly Biggs, Fred, Bill, and Clarence. The whole family run that thing. It was a family deal. And they put on a wonderful meal. People that, in them days, the trains all run into Livermore. People would come up from San Francisco and Oakland just to have dinner here on Sundays. Spend the rest of the day and then go back in the evening train. Come here about 11 o'clock and go leave here about 5 again. And that wonderful meal you got cost you just 50 cents.
50 cents.
And
imagine.
The mechanics that worked for at that time, the Valley Garage had just started. Carl and Art Clark and George Jackson, Johnny Nienberg, and myself, we ate down at Malley's and we had a meal ticket. We paid $5 for it, but it had 20 meals on it. Tilly Biggs would punch you on it as we went out. 20 meals for $5.
Well, a drink of water in a restaurant now costs you 50 cents.
Yeah. Oh.
Times have sure changed.
Yeah. And if you look down on the street down there too, some people might look. They had a brewery down the main street here too, Wendell Jordan. There's still some of the old brass letters on the sidewalk there, I think where the brewery was. You know, in the brass letters laid in the sidewalk.
Approximately where?
That's approximately further down below Malley's. And I think you'll see the brass letters down there yet.
That would be approaching L Street then.
Yeah. And then there was another set of letters down here at the corner here. It used to be M.S. Anthony. Part of the name is still there. When Anthony had the store with the Masonic building, Anthony had a store there. Charlie Livermore ran it for a while, and afterwards Joe Callahan ran that store. And Hank Seaband used to drive the delivery wagon.
Wasn't that an old grocery store?
Yeah, it was a grocery store. When Livermore and Callahan had it, was a grocery store.
That was H.J. Callahan, the manager of Wells Fargo Bank.
Yeah. And they also had a set of those brass letters that were still down in front of the Outfalls building, the IOF big brass letters.
That's very interesting. I don't think too many people realize that.
Well, as they repaired the sidewalk, some of these letters got taken away, but the Outfalls are still complete. But the brewery, in other words, just partial there, but you can see it has to be there at the back.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jack, as long as we're talking about buildings, how many service stations do you recall in Livermore, say, 60 years ago?
Well, there wasn't no such thing as service stations. The first thing that resembled a garage was Henry Crane had a repair shop down here. Between the railroad track and the hub corner there, you know. He repaired sewing machines and everything else, and pretty soon automobiles come in. Well, he tried his hand on those. But about that time, Ed Allard and Shorty Phillips started the Valley Garage there, but they were there just a short time, and then the Clark boys bought it. And then Varney started at about the same time. Those were the only two garages in town.
And
by the way, gasoline at that time sold for 19 cents a gallon.
That's just a tax on gasoline now.
Yeah.
Didn't Danny O'Neill and Hansie Anderson run service stations here in Livermore for years?
Hansie, I think, run the first service station down there in the corner. And I'll tell you a funny one if you want that on the tape here. Min and I, we used to drive every Sunday and take the kids and go down to Hayward with my folks, see? And I had in my pocket was a $10 bill, and I stopped and I got a tank full of gas, would have been about $3 or so at that time, and I give him the 10, and he got a bunch of cash, and I didn't ever looked at it, and I put it in my pocket. When I got down to Hayward's, I looked, I had the change in my $10 bill too, so Hans, he chipped himself out of $10. So when on the way back, I stopped and said, Hans, you made a mistake. Oh, no, I haven't made a mistake. He said, I said, well, I guess I'll keep this 10, and I told him, what is it? He took the 10, don't worry.
Oh, he took the 10.
He didn't have a cash register. He's all through his pocket.
Is Hansie Anderson still alive?
No. I talked to Bob, his son here.
Mm-hmm.
He's down at the company reunion. He brought Hansie Anderson. He brought the house bar over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby. He's not a big guy.
And didn't Danny O'Neill and Jack Williams run the other service station?
Out here, right down on the corner.
For years and years and years.
Years there on that one, yeah.
Now, that's approximately where the park is now.
Yeah, right where the park is.
The opposite of the
flagpole. When I came here before, they had that station. It was the old Livermore Hotel was there, run by a fellow by the name of Collins. And next to that was a little barbershop. A fellow named Crowley had a barbershop. Next to that was a little place. Marshall Mack had a little store there. That was Mrs. Thurkoff's father. You know. Then beyond that was Ryan's livery stable. That's where the Tesla stages used to leave from in the morning.
As long as we're talking about buildings in Livermore, how many restaurants were in Livermore in the early years?
Well, there was Mally's, and there was LaFranza's. They had a restaurant down in big two-story building down there, where Sam Rosenthal used to have his tailor shop there. You know that building. The LaFranza's had a restaurant in there, and in long in the 20s or why, there was different little restaurants, but those were the two oldest ones. Yeah.
And then didn't, in later years, Greyhound Bus Depot.
Yes, they were down there in the old hotel down there.
They put in a restaurant.
Yeah, they put in a restaurant too. Yeah. Yeah, and I remember when that, before the Greyhound come in there, during Prohibition, Bondi run that saloon stuff there. He had an old windmill down there, had his own water, and he never oiled it, and that son of a gun would squeal to the people that hollered, and the cops would come up and have to go and oil that mill.
Tell me, who do you remember being the first police officer in Livermore?
The first police officer that I can remember was Charlie Lefevre. Charlie was first. I may not get him right in rotation because I worked with all of them. It was Charlie Lefevre. Dennis Burnell was for a while. Dan Smith, and George Doten, then Johnny Michaels, see? But then Chris Iverson served for a while too. And at that time, the entire police force was one marshal. They called him the marshal, and he was on in the daytime. And when I first came, they had only one night watchman. But then afterwards, they got two night watchmen. Two of them come on at 6, and one of them went straight through the morning. The other fellow at midnight, he changed. And those two night watchmen that I had were Lachlan Rogers and Adolph Johnson.
I think you forgot one old-timer. He's a very, very good friend of yours. Constable Seaban.
Oh, well, Constable, yeah. He was Constable. Yeah, it wasn't a marshal. Constable was a different deal, see? Constable, yeah. Constable was they worked under the county, you know. Yeah, yeah. Oh, Seaban and I were great pals. Seaban and I always cooked the pints together. I always took Seaban along. He's a good cook.
Varying from the buildings here in Livermore and whatnot, at one time you and several other people owned a nice summer resort or summer home up in the Livermore Hills. Can you tell me something about that?
Well, it's called the Pines Camp. And I think it was one of the nicest camps in the hills. It was kept up beautifully. And, there was a bunch of them belonged to it. There must have been 15 members when we started, you know. And they had a screen completely around three sides of the house. You could sleep 20 people up there. And, you know, Carl and Mady and the youngsters and I and my family and the Gallaghers practically lived up there in the summertime. The ladies stayed up there continually, and the kids, and Carl and I and Mac, we'd come down and work and go back at 5 o'clock, we'd go back up again. And one thing, we never worried, because we had the fellow that we called him, the old man from the mountains, that was Ray George. Once a day, Ray George would ride up horseback to see everything was okay.
How was your water situation up there?
Well, at first it was bum. We had to carry our own water when it first started. And one day, we had a little supply, but not very good. And McWicker and Tom Knox, Tom was a great guy, he was always up there, and myself, we came down from, we'd been visiting Biloxi, and we noticed a little mud spot on the bank. By golly, the water comes out to the surface, there must be something underneath there. So it was time for dinner, we were heading for the camp. And after dinner, we got a pick and a shovel, and we went up there, and before the sun went down, we had about an inch of water coming out of that hill. That was the water supply after that. All kinds of water. And we put in the swimming tank and everything else then, you know. That's got a beautiful water supply there. And that was just a little mud spot. It was just getting away in that shale rock.
How many years were you people involved in the Pines Lodge?
Well, it's sold here. The last two, they kept it dropping out until by little till Mike Ricker practically owned the whole thing toward the last, see. And he sold that, God, 10, 15 years ago, I guess.
Say about 19...
But the time, well... Yeah.
55?
Yes, it must have been wrong. I don't know exactly. But as long as Carl and myself and Mike Ricker were there, we kept it up beautiful. Every winter, just as soon as we thought the last rain was over, they had a little cleat track tractor up there and a little road grader. Mac had run the tractor and I run the grader. We had that road was in perfect shape all the time. Now it's all messed up. Oh, everything's just gone. Pot, you know.
How far out of town was the Pines Lodge?
It's just about up right to the camp. I think it's 21 miles. About 20 miles through the gate, and it's about a mile up the hill, you know. Just, we always said it was 21 miles.
And that was on the way up to the old Magnesite mines
out
of Livermore.
Road, yep.
Yeah. And at that time, that was an all-paved road, wasn't it, Jack?
Well, it was a dirt road. Just a dirt road. And it wasn't like it is now. But now it's nice, you know.
No, I remember as a young fellow going up there myself that that road was, in most places, it was only one car width, and there was some pull-out so you could pass.
Funny thing, afterwards, you know, when they started in the, opened that Magnesite mine and they run those trucks, there was about 12 big trucks running up there. And boy, they were wild drivers. It was Skinny Rich was one of them, and Dago Jeff.
Well, my dad
your
was
dad
one.
Was on that too, and Meininger and all them guys, and a bunch of Greeks and Baranuses. When they come down, we'd watch them. We'd go, we'd see a cloud of dust coming. We pulled to the first wide place on the road, and we stopped. And they got by. He didn't have a chance for them guys. Boy. No, those were the days. And then they unloaded that ore down on the bunker down here, you know, about where the Orchard Supply is. They had a big bunker where the trucks went up in the bunker, they dumped the ore. Well, that ore is killing them. It's hot. It's hot as a firecracker. And the bunkers would get a fire. Now the fire department would go down. I guess three or four times I went down the volunteer fire department to put the bunkers out.
Didn't those trucks back up that?
Back right up that thing, and down she go and dump it in and right into the box in the big car. You know,
it was about 50 feet in the air, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty. Yeah, well, you get over the top of a car, you know.
Yeah. Up and out. I remember that as a little kid. Yeah. Watch the trucks back up there.
I remember this, the Dago Jeff. Oh boy, he was a wild truck driver.
You mentioned something about the fire department, Jack.
Yeah.
Were you ever a member of the Livermore Fire Department?
Yeah, for about 30 years.
Oh, for 30 years. Well.
Yeah. All we had was a couple of hose carts. They had that and a hook and ladder wagon that didn't do them any good, and they had an old hand pumper down there. But we had pretty good luck on the fires. The only one ever got away was that church, and we couldn't help it. Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned to me the other day that the old original Catholic church burnt here in Livermore, and you gave me a pretty good reason why. Can you explain that?
The main fire was at Horton and Kennedy Lumber Yard, and that's all lumber. That burnt like hell, you know. And the way the steeple was on that church on the front and the tower, the heat, you know, bring those shingles from the mill up, and they fell on the parsonage house, and they'd slip off, and that didn't get a fire, but they fell. Some of them fell in behind that tower, and they were burning while we were putting the other fire out. We didn't know it until somebody says, "Oh, the church is afire." Well, by that time, it was too late. And then we tried and put that big ladder they had up against the church, and it was, I forget who it was, went up with that hose, but when you get about to the gutter, there's no more water, no more pressure, you know, had no pump, and I could have no. So I just had to sit there and watch the thing burn. And the funny thing about that, was Chief Wright was, Pete Wright was there on the job, see? So we had hoses all across the railroad track up here, a bunch of them. The train come down from Tracy. Oh, they were going to run out with that hose putting there. And you can imagine what old Pete Wright told that engineer in that engine. He got up in that cab and he told him off.
You mentioned Pete Wright. Pete Wright, what was Pete Wright's job here?
He was a town surveyor, an engineer, surveyed and everything else. And he was, for one thing, he was the first traffic officer. He and Louis Ike were the first county traffic officers, you know. But he was a good surveyor. He used to do a lot of surveying up in the mountains. And he told me something, and I found out afterward he was right. He says up in these hills here that you cannot get a real accurate survey. Metal in the ore there, magnetic ore, towards the compass off.
Hmm, Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah. No, he told me that. He said, you get close, but he says, you one place, you throw a line, and then you get somebody else, and you couldn't check back, but don't. Lord, I've heard that before.
It's very interesting to hear that.
Well, I seen a welder drill. He went to a bunch of magnetic ore because it was Dick Powell. He used to drill welds here. He drilled a weld up here for Neely, up here in the home place. And Dick had a habit, whenever he drilled a weld, he had a little sloop spot. He'd always look as if it's any metal thing. And all these little flakes of iron come in the bottom of the box. We were up there. And I happened to go along, it's with a screwdriver. All that stuff jumps up on the screwdriver. That ore was magnetic.
Very interesting. You mentioned the old magnesite mines. What was this magnesite, and what was it used for?
Well, they used it for for a while they were using it in as a plumbing out the sinks, drain boards. They were molding it, but what they got out of it mostly is it's magnesium. See, it was like chemical companies. And that was going big there. And then this Dow Chemical Company, they found out you could get the same darn thing out of salt water. That stopped mines.
Oh.
Yeah. And Dow was really...
And didn't they use the magnesite in something to do with steel?
Well, manganese they used for steel.
Manganese.
They mined a lot of that up here.
Mm-hmm.
Manganese. That big manganese mine over there in Corral by Corral Hall, that's the big one. And they mined it all up here. They mined chrome up on Cedar Mountain. There's a lot of good chrome up there. Chrome, coal, quicksilver, everything you got. You want a little more hills here.
Yeah, I worked in the quicksilver mine.
Yeah. Phoenix mine.
Up in the, what do they call it? Deer Park.
Oh, Deer Park, yeah.
Winiger Boys. Yeah. Jim Winiger and myself worked up there for 5 months.
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny thing about the Winiger, and this concerns Pete McKenney's too. Pete McKenney's butcher shop was right down here, but right next to where the Cianoni building is, a little narrow building. And when I first came here, they renewed that, and then during Prohibition, I guess it was these Italians, they got it anyhow, they started saloon in there. And I had to clean up and do some plumbing there. In the back was the old meat chopper, the old steam boiler and engine, everything that Pete McKenney had used years ago was still in the back. So boy, I got my eye on that little steam engine, I gobbled that. And I had it for years. It was a cute little one. One day, Winter could come and he saw it down there and he looked at his, something. Oh, might as well. And I found out afterward, he run that engine with compressed air, pulling ore out of one of his mines. And I tried to get it here a few years ago. I said, gee, that'd be nice for our museum here. But son, we're going to give it to the Patterson Museum. That's where it is now.
Well, it's down in Patterson now.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Reverting back a little bit, didn't you have a very, very popular Italian restaurant here in Livermore for a long time?
Croce's. Oh yeah, that was something. He was a good one, a good. Yeah.
And that restaurant was located in alongside of the Cianoni building.
Yeah, right in the lower part of the Cianoni building. And he also, after he put one upstairs, he had two restaurants. And he, by the way, his son and his wife. Have the rest of the Croce's over at Lodi now.
Very, very good restaurant.
Oh yeah, very good. Yeah.
Jack, tell me, what do you remember about the first automobiles here in Livermore? Do you remember who owned them and what makes they were and what not?
The first one, one of the very first, was owned by Dr. Taylor. And it was a Model N Ford. It was a peculiar thing because on those ends, the flywheel was on the front end of the engine and the crank came through the radiator, right through the front. And Elmer Still and his father had they called him at that time a Mary Oldsmobile. Instead of a steering wheel, it had a handle. It looked more like a buggy. And Dick Alward had an auto car. Old Dickoff had a case. Hageman's had a case. Tom Carneal had a Stevens Duryea. That was the biggest one at that time. And those are the first ones around Livermore here. And I tell you a funny thing about Doc Taylor's. At that same time, when this first automobiles came out, the tires were small and not very good, and they had what they called never leaks. They put them in tires. They afterwards put it in bicycle tires too. It looks like this gunk that they put linoleum down with. Well, Henry Crane, he talked Doc Taylor into Houston. That, oh, he said, Doc, you never have any trouble. Have your tires good all the time. Well, Doc was coming up Main Street one day in his old Ford there, and right about where Emery's store was, it was a real hot day, that front one tire blew out, and all that stuff came right backwards all over Doc. Oh, boy. That was one mix-up that Henry King got into.
You mentioned somebody had a Model N Ford.
Yeah. Well, that was Doc Taylor. Doc, he had one, and I tell you, another fellow that had one of those for a while was Tony Roderick out here. They had Model N Ford. That was the first four-cylinder. There was an old two-cylinder Ford the year before that. And one of the cars came after, one of the first cars, but not the first, was a single-cylinder Cadillac that Crane had. Single-cylinder. I know Art Clark and I used to borrow from Wendell on.
Of course, that was about when, Jack? What year? What years was that?
It must be around what, 7 long in there. Well, Art Clark was still alive, you know. Yeah. About the time they were building the Western there, about that time.
What was the first automobile that you remember owning?
I remember owning? Well, on a real estate trade in Hayward, before I became here, I had a locomobile steamer.
Say that again now.
A locomobile steam car.
A locomobile steam car.
Yeah.
Never heard of that one,
yeah,
but...
No, they made a few. There was a locomobile made of steamer, White made of steamer, Stanley made of steamer, and there was a couple of those, White and... Yeah, but they were... You had to become a steam engineer to run them. They got me in trouble, you know. I'll tell you a funny thing about a steam car. Those things had a sap. Shorty Phillips, when he could run the first stage depot between Livermore.
Can you go back a little bit and start again?
Well, I started to tell you about Shorty Phillips' bus. He run the first stage between Livermore and Oakland. He made two trips a day. His stopping place was down here where Scott's Candy Store was in the Outfalls building. And I never forget, I used to go down with him to Hayward's because it was handy for me because he passed right past our ranch. And one day he was down there, and there's a couple of guys, I guess there were salesmen or something, come down to stand around, and all they did before he got started was walk around that Stanley steamer and find fault with the darn thing, see? And I could see Shorty's hair was kind of standing up on the back. He didn't like that. He always stopped at Dublin. That's where he took on water, because he said the best water for that boiler was at Dublin, at Bondi's there. And that's when the old Bulmer Hill was there. That wasn't paved or fixed like it is now, see? And I noticed him when he got near to let that water take on the water, he was firing that thing, that old steam gauge was going up to beat out. And he goes right, starts out, and when he gets right to the foot of the Palmer Hill, he shuts her off like that, and he turns back, and he says, "Now you two SBs," he says, "hang on to your hat." He pulled that throttle open, and he got to the top of that hill, it was going 55 miles an hour that stage.
Boy, that was fast.
Oh, boy, those things can go. A steam engine is no limit to the power. And I could see, I knew the way he was letting that steam go, but he wanted a good head of steam when he hit the bottom of that grate. Those fellas never said another damn word. But you're a lot of trouble, boiler trouble, you know, get bad water. And I helped him several times work a half a night down there rolling the boiler tube so he could go the next day. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Jack, you worked a lot on steam boilers, didn't you? And
oh, yes, I worked on steam boilers a lot. And a lot of these tractors over in the Byron country, they were big steam tractors. They used to have put new boiler tubes in them. I would retube boilers there. I retook a little French laundry down in the Hayward for the planing mills. I worked with a boiler maker for a long time.
That's right. A lot of the farm machinery, the harvesters and whatnot, were all steam.
I remember here, you know, when the Lewis brothers from Hayward used to have two machines coming in, thrash all this stuff in the Little Moore Valley here. There were two machines from Hayward up here. You could hear them, they start, as soon as the sun dried the stuff up, they start to thrash, and boy, they work till 8 o'clock at night when you hear them blow the whistle. Time should quit.
Yeah, those were stationary thrash machines.
Yeah.
They didn't pull any of the harvesters, combine harvesters.
No, they had anything out of stack.
Yeah.
But those Holtz and those, your dad used to run some of those. Big tractors. Yeah.
Well, can you think of any more of the old timers around Livermore here that you got anything on that you want to put on tape?
No, but I tell you, I'd like to. Did you ask? Did you see Alfie Sekel?
No, I haven't seen Alfie yet, but somebody else is going to talk to Alfie.
My old boy, he's the same. Alfie's birthday and mine are 2 days apart. They're the same age, born the same month. I'm on the 6th and he's on the 8th.
And what year was that, Jack?
In 86.
In 86?
Yeah.
Well, and I don't hardly remember that.
And Alfie Sarko still saddles a horse every day and rides over for every day to see Ernie Wente. Rides across the hill there, he's spry boy. Joe McGlinch and I took him over to the Bacon Island when they went to the camp there, and he watched all that farming there, boy. He never stopped talking off from the time we started till we got home.
Say,
glad to kick out of that.
That reminds me of something. What type of lighting did they have in the Carnegie Building when they first built that?
Lighting in the building?
Yes.
They had electricity in them.
They had electricity in those days?
Yeah.
They didn't use gas lights.
No.
Yeah.
Where a few old, when I first came to town, there was a few old gas machines. Dutcher had one. McCowan had one and Mess had one, and there was one of them. They had the gasoline gas. They had the gas in the tank underground. Then they had a tower with a weight on it and kind of a pump deal. It was gasoline gas. See? And at one time they had a gas, but that's long before my time they had a gas piped in town here, you know, they'd give it up. But that gasoline gas, there was quite a few of them used that. And then a fellow came around and sold a lot of gas plants, there's some of them around the country yet, I guess. I don't think they use it. Made it acetylene, you know, when they had acetylene that we used on these. I know Carnegie had them and different Hagen, some of them people that had a little extra money, they had gas.
Well, power has gone a long way. We were just talking to the windmill man yesterday.
I got something from the windmill man.
And they've got quite a deal to offer.
I have some beautiful pictures I wanted to show the windmill man. I don't know if you had them where I got
them. Getting back, Jack, I'd like some more specifics on the Livermore Fire Department, as you remember it, years back, and then kind of up to the present day.
Well,
wasn't it a volunteer deal?
And the town, first we got nothing, you know, and after a while they got a little money ahead. And I think every month they appropriated $150 to divide among the 25 firemen, see? And you got paid according, if you answered roll call, if you didn't, you missed one, you lost out, it was prorated. And we had a couple old guys, I got a kick out of them, I won't mention the name, but they belonged to the fire department, but they never came to a fire. But when the fire bell rang, they hit for the firehouse so they could answer the roll call. I'll never forget those two guys.
And then you had an old, how did you call them to the, how did you call them to let them know there was a
that
fire?
Had the old bell up on top of the house, and that's the time the stairways went up the side and a rope on you. You went down and pulled on a rope, you know. Then afterwards, when they put that electric stuff in, I had help put that in. That air tank, you know, and the compressed air deal, the air compressor. And we also made for a while we had a call, you know, a code. Somebody built it with McGricker and I and Pete Wright built that, and they had a shaft with different dials on it, like a turret lay, you know. And he said, string so many blasts and stop them, so many on the horn. It worked pretty good for a while.
And that meant if you got like three long and one short, that meant that it was in north part of town. And
I forget just what that code
was. Yeah, and three shorts meant someplace else.
We had just those hose carts. It was a kick, you know. Fellows would get the hose cart and be five, six guys on the nearer they get to the fire, one fellow he'd let go and he'd run for the fire. Pretty soon it'd be about two men pulling the hose cart, the other one would be down the fire. Oh, golly.
What was the...
That's one experience they had with it. Afterwards, again, we call it the motorized fire department. I have a picture of that. The Valley Garage used to fire, they'd come out and they had a hitch on the back there, and we could hook the hose cart on that and they'd call Charlie Cranes and he drove it. Well, there was a fire down at the sanitarium there. And we was going down the L Street, held the dealer up, you know. And so he said, hold on, there it is. And Charlie put on the brake quick, and us fellas holding that thing in the back. Before we come up, we hit the seat. Oh, what a mess.
Outside of the old hand pumpers, do you remember the first power-driven fire truck they had here?
Seagraves engine. I forget what year they got that.
Well, didn't they have an old Model T first?
Well, they had a Model T. I'll go with that. I held Henry Calloway, McWicker. And all the volunteer firemen, we built that. We bought Henry Crane, or George Crane, rather. I think they donated the old Model T Ford. And we took this old tank and different stuff, and we built it up, had hose on the small hose. Yeah, they still have that, the fire department, I think.
That's right, they use it in parades.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you went from that to...
Seagraves. That's when we left to go to Pale, I don't know why. That was a beautiful engine, the first one. But they talk about rebuilding. They left it out in the rain there for years, and it was a perfect working order. Last place they used to pump water down at the sewer farm, you know, and they left it out.
How many people did you have? How many volunteers did you have on the
farm? 25. We always try to keep it 25.
25. Yeah. Was there one paid head fireman?
No, none of them was paid.
Nobody was paid. It was all...
Different chiefs. The last chief I remember was Al Bonney.
That's right. I think Al Bonney was the last fire chief in Livermore.
Yeah, no, nobody got paid.
And wasn't there a light that burned in the fire department?
Yeah, that light is still... They still have that. So that's an old Edison light that's... Kelly, that's been burning there for years and years and years. Yeah.
Where is that light now?
I think they have it off the new firehouse. Yeah, I know they moved it down. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's quite interesting, Jack. You brought out a...
Something about the fire department the other day, and I can't think of it right now.
You brought out a lot of interesting points today, and I'm sure that in years to come, people are really going to enjoy hearing this.
Well.
And Jack, tell me, for nightlife in Livermore, years and years ago, what were some of the big events?
Well, I guess the largest event was the Fireman's Ball. That was once a year. And boy, that was a sellout. Everybody, if you didn't come to the Fireman's Ball, you wasn't classed at all. Oh, everybody came to that.
And where do they hold that?
Sweeney's, old Sweeney Opera House down here. And I can tell you one thing. For a while, there used to be a bunch of people, they were crooks, vandals rather, from 23rd Avenue. They called them the 23rd Avenue Gang. They used to come up to three different times. They'd come up, and just when the dance would break up, they'd start a fight, see? Well, the last time it didn't work out right. Pete Wright put about five of us with billy clubs out the door. He said, when them fellows start that fight, you work them over. They never came back. That came, but they used to come to every dance and always start a fight just at the last. And they wouldn't check the hats with the hat boy. They had them on a hook underneath the coat here so they could make a quick getaway. And the gals that were with them were just as bad as the men. They were a tough bunch of monkeys. And then they had Holy Ghost celebration. They had a big dance down there. That was a big thing.
That was a big parade.
Oh, they had a parade and they had a dance and they had the big feed, that auction, all the cattle and stuff that people had donated. That was a big thing. I remember one night they had all the parade and was putting up the fireworks and everybody was holding when something had burst out. Pretty soon, they right across the street, somebody had a next to the house from Mrs. Peters lived, there was a haystack, and one of them rockets come down in that haystack, and fire department.
And then I guess the other big main event would be the Livermore Rodeo
street dances.
Due on the 4th of July.
Yeah, they'd have them too.
Of course, there was plenty of fights and whatnot there.
Yeah, we fight there once a while. Yeah. And all the kids in Livermore, they had one fellow was their champion, Johnny Snyder. Yeah.
Jack, I remember myself being around here as a little kid. They talked about water running down the main street of Livermore.
Yeah.
Could you tell me something about that?
You didn't get that one I just told you. You didn't have it on then.
No.
No. Yes, I've seen it in 1907. It was a very wet year, and the water came down Livermore Avenue there, from out by Kincannon, came right through town, and they had done something out here on the Western Pacific, up in the railroad there, that cut the water this way too. And there was about 2 feet of water, right where the flagpole is, in that part of the town. There was water, well, it was water in all the stores. In Dutch's store, the water was about a foot deep in the front. And over at where Rusty Hansen was afterwards, McLean at a flour mill, they got down in there so they couldn't run the elevator. The basement got full of water. Did a lot of damage. And all the basement was full of water. people couldn't get, guys couldn't get to the post office there. And I know that Adolph Johnson borrowed my hip boot so he could get around. He was a night watchman, he didn't have boots. And that was a lot of water, I'll tell you.
And you mentioned about somebody rowing down the main street.
Henry Lassen. Henry Lassen had a duck boat, and he rowed down Main Street, then down L Street, over by the depot, and then back up the railroad track, back to Lassen's, just going looping around and around on a duck boat. And over, just where Toyota place is now, Ozzie Davis, there was a little house back then. It was a Mexican family that lived in it, the Valenzuela family. And they were all sticking their heads out of the windows. They couldn't get out of the house. They were all surrounded with water. No, but it did. All the basement was full to the top, water right up the mountain. Sweeney used to have his beer kegs in the rack downstairs, and you could hear him bumping like this up against the floor. They were floating.
That was the old bar there that Sweeney operated.
Yeah, it was John Sweeney. Yeah, that was a great place. You know, I was really friendly with the Sweeneys, because I'd go over in summer evenings, Kate Sweeney'd come out, Mama Sweeney, Papa, and the Kate, the three of them, you know. And I'd go and sit there with them for hours and talk. And they had a water trough there. If you'd come and drive water, the horses there then, you know, water trough from the Sweeneys, from farmers. And I was really friendly with the Sweeneys. They were very nice.
Jack, tell me, do you remember when the old Callahan House was built? That's the old red house now that's just kitty corner from the Livermore High School on East Avenue.
No, I don't remember that.
Do you remember who was the first owner of that?
First one that I knew was Callahan.
It was the Callahan family. But that house must be close to 100 years old right now.
Yes, it must be, because I tell you, at the time the Hetchy came in, there was no plumbing upstairs in that building. And it was your mother, I think, at that time. She wanted to rent out some rooms upstairs, and I put in the toilet and the bathroom upstairs, and that bit is still there upstairs in that house.
Well, I know that house is 65 years old.
Well, it looked to me just as old then when I worked on it as it does right now.
And I think Joe Callahan was born in that house.
Yeah.
And Joe would be close to 90 today, wouldn't he?
So it's over 100 years old.
Yeah. Old. Say, mentioning Joe Callahan, tell me, Jack, years ago they had, during World War One or right after World War One, they had a Company I, National Guard here.
Yeah.
Could you tell me something about that, and how many people were in it, and how many people are still in it?
That was originated in 1900, and they've been having a reunion. We had one here just last Saturday. There was only 6 showed up there, and I have pictures of it where there was 40, and they come little by little. This year we've lost 3 members.
You've lost 3 members this year?
Yeah. The only ones were down here last Saturday was Bob Livermore, Clarence Anderson, Harold Anderson, Johnny Miller, he used to be sheriff of Cuttercourt, and myself.
And
there are a few more, but they're so far away that
they couldn't make it.
They couldn't make it. They're all up in the 85s and 90s.
So there wouldn't be.
I tell you who's there, Bert Inman. He was there too.
There wouldn't be more than maybe 10 or 12 of you still left?
I think there's over 10 left altogether now.
Well, that's quite good, but 5 of them were able to make the dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's very good.
Yeah.
And did Company I ever see any action?
Yeah. The first action they saw was down the Mexican border, you know, and then a fire in Mount Tamalpais, the Mexican border, and then after, during the war, where they slipped into the regular service, but the Mexican border, they were down there. Yeah, that used to be we used to meet down there. They had their armory. He was in the second floor of the Sweeney Opera House, and that's where they had all the uniforms, and they used to drill there. That was their headquarters, Sweeney Opera House. Yeah.
Jack, when you first come to Livermore, what did they have in the line of hospitals?
Well, it wasn't very much at first. Mrs. Alward had a place down, I think it was on K Street. She was a trained nurse, and she ran a kind of a semi-hospital. People would come there, she'd take care of them. Doctors would come down there and wait on them. Then Dr. Judson fixed up the old Taylor building and made a hospital out of that for a while. And then after that way, Dr. Dolan built the St. Paul's Hospital, which was a regular hospital. And that's about the only ones they had in town.
Then that St. Paul's operated for years and years until...
When they quit using it as a hospital, they run it as an old people's home now, I think. Yeah.
And what do you recall of the old Livermore Sanitarium?
Well, that was quite a place. They had some real expensive patients there, but there were mental patients. On one side, it was all mental patients. And it was a big institution there because they employed a lot of people. And I know I did a lot of work there.
And then the county had a hospital further out the road.
Yeah, out at Del Valle. You know, where they had the children, the tubercular children. Yeah, that was out on the old Miller Ranch out there. That's run now by this, what is this, fetus they call it?
Buenos Vitas?
Vitas Boys Home or something like that. Yeah, they had that. And then they had the, first it was a tubercular hospital. That was quite a place out there.
Jack, just for the fun of it, say back 60 years ago when Livermore's population was 1,500 people.
Yeah.
About how many bars did they have in town?
Bars?
Or saloons?
Oh, plenty.
About how many would you say?
Oh, I would say, at least 15.
At least 15 operating bars.
Operating bars, yeah.
When the population was 25,000, how many operating bars did they have?
About 20, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Now that the population is 50,000.
Yeah. I don't know how many they've got now, but I don't get downtown anymore.
Yeah. But it was quite interesting to know that, or think that Livermore had a population of 1,500 people and 15 bars, or saloons, as they called them in those days.
And funny, they were saloons. Now they call them, it's fancy names for them, cocktail lounges. And
right.
Just plain old saloons.
Do you remember anything of the Macklemore when he used to drive cattle through Livermore?
You bet I sure do.
Tell us.
He used to keep his cattle in a lot down here near Highway 50, you know, down on the corner of the triangle lot where the school is down there. And I forget one time, right across the street here, the house that Charlie Francisco, you know, he originally built this little house over here. And Charlie had just put in a brand new lawn and all seeded and everything else. Macklemore was moving some cattle from down there over here, and they just walked all over Charlie's new lawn.
And then I remember they used to take, Macklemore would take his cattle from Livermore up to the old Johnson Ranch on the Patterson Pass.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'd be driving them at 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And they walked all over everybody's place.
Yeah. You didn't mention Plank's place out here on the highway, did you?
No.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about there. You know, out of Greenville, is it there? At Greenville out there, it was run by a Mr. and Mrs. Plank, and they had one son, Jack Plank. And he was French, I think, but she was a wonderful, wonderful cook. And she used to, you know, cook up wonderful feeds for people. They'd order them. And every once in a while, all us garage boys and us sheet metal workers around town, all mechanics, we'd get together and we'd make a date, and Mrs. Plank would put up a wonderful feed for us. Well, that was a long time ago, before Springtown or anything was out there. Well, we got out there early, a whole bunch of us, but Harry Johnson, he had to work a little late that night at the garage. He didn't get there in time. He was a little bit late. At that time, the only lights they had on these automobiles were these carbon lights. They didn't have electric lights. So Skinny got off late, and he was going to go out to that feed because he was supposed to be in on it. And at the same time, Jack Bordas was moving a bunch of calves across the road. He thought, well, it's nice and quiet now, nobody on the road, I'll move these cattle tonight. And Skinny was hightailing out there to get the planks, and he plows right into that bunch of calves. But he come out there, he says, boy, he says, for a half a mile I had a calf sitting in the seat next to me, he said. Yeah, but what a feed that lady used to put on, Jack Plank.
You remember the old hay wagons coming into town here?
Yeah, oh, boy. I sure do.
Tell us what you remember the old...
You know, when I first came here, there weren't any trucks. Everything was hauled by teams. You see, then a big excitement was when a runaway went through town or something like that. One wagon piled up right in Emmerich's show window one time. A wagon, a runaway, smashed right through the glass. And one time a deer, somebody scared a deer through town. They went through a window too. But all the grain and hay was hauled by team. I remember about the first trucks to come along was Rudy LeMay and Chris Swanberg and a few of those fellows got trucks. They hauled it then. All that stuff was trucked and hauled into these warehouses down here.
Mm-hmm. And those days they had five or six big
warehouses
down
there, and there was what they called the hay train. There's a train left every day with a load of hay, and they even had a big water tank down here for the locomotives and the round table there for turning them locomotives around. A lot of people don't know that, but that's right down there below the depot. They had to be turned around because the engines had to be turned around. They did. And there was always three or four locomotives down there.
Yeah, and those hay wagons, they used to have about 6 and 8 head of horses.
Yeah.
Hooked to them, and a wagon and a couple of trailers.
Yeah. Yeah, everything was hauled by, you bet.
And in those days, you could buy a bucket of steam beer for how much?
2 bits.
2 bits.
25 cents.
25 cents,
yeah,
for a bucket.
Yeah, we're on a job here for fun, and everybody dropping a nickel and somebody go down with a bucket and get a bucket of beer. Yeah, another thing, too, old Papa Cardoso used to come in with live oak, finest oak wood in the world, delivered here in town for $7 a cord.
Ooh, don't say that. You're going to make some people feel awful bad when they're paying $130, $140, $150.
That's what an old Cardoso, his income, cut wood all year. Years ago, you see the old stumps up there where he cut wood. You see him come down off them Black Hill there, old Papa Cardoso, and another old timer up there was an old climber.
Well, I think those days are gone forever.
Gone forever. Geez, where they get... Now they're hijacking wood up here. They go up with a pickup from the mountains here. They go up the canyon with a power saw and saw down trees, and away they go. They steaming wood up here all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, Jack, it's been mighty interesting talking to you.
Well, I hope it did in a good way.
You've certainly brought out a lot of good information that people will cherish in the years to come.
Yeah.
And now that it's on tape, why, it's going to be much better than it would be if it was just typewritten out.
I'll tell you, this is just a little one. The house next door to me, Carl Clark's house, a lot of the lumber in that house was from the original store over at Midway, Clark's store. When they wrecked that, Carl used the building, the lumber over here, a lot of it.
I'll be done. The other day when I was talking to you, you told me about the St. Michael's Convent building over here. Could you tell me something about that?
Well, I was here when they were building it. I watched that from the start. And a lot of the material in that came from a Tesla. When they were dismantling the Tesla coal mine, timbers and brick and all kinds of stuff. And I remember Eddie Callahan and Ed Ellis, they were hauling stuff all the time. And the bell that was on top of the academy there for a long time, I think they took it down now. But that was a bell, supposed to be. And the bell originally was on the church in Tesla. That's where the powers got it, somewhere or other.
That was the original bell in the church in Tesla?
Tesla, yeah. That's what they told me.
That's a good number of years ago.
Yeah. I think they took it off now, you know, they don't use it. But I seen them standing in the backyard, I think, one time on the yard there. So that's a long time ago.
But the majority of the lumber and the bricks and the whatnot?
Whatever they could use.
Yeah.
The timbers.
It was brought from the old...
We used to, at that time when they were wrecking that building, Clark's and us, so we got our wood. Ed Ellis would come over, they'd go over there and work and haul stuff over. They'd haul you a whole load of wood over here for $5, all they could load on a truck, great big timbers. We sawed them up for wood. Someone even had old bolts and stuff sticking with you.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... what was pitiful was when they wrecked that Carnegie. That'll make you...
Yeah, that was further up the canyon.
Yeah,
that was the brickyard.
Yeah, but... the way they, as you said, beautiful machinery, you know, great big lathes and milling machines there, those junks. I never forget those two Jews that bought it, Sugarman and Blenders. Art Clark used to haul them over every morning from Livermore. They stay here at Malley's and then take them over there. They blew all their stuff up with dynamite. They started having chunks so they could load on the car. You see them cars go by here, half of a lathe, the front end of a milling machine. Just
what were they? Scrap metal?
Scrap metal dealers.
Scrap metal dealers.
The only thing that I can remember that was saved was one of the boilers, and Oliver Saltworks bought that. That was the use. I don't know, maybe still be there. I don't
the old Oliver Saltworks over here in
yeah, hey, was
Mount Eden. Mount Eden.
Yeah, they bought one of the boilers.
Well, be darned.
No, but they took that machinery. They weren't interested in the reselling. They just wanted to scrap metal. But when you see good, I sick hate to see good machinery go.
Yeah, and then the old Carnegie Brickworks, it moved to where? Roseville?
I don't know where they went to.
Or did it come
Lincoln,
to
Lincoln? There's a lot Lincoln. Of clay works up in Lincoln.
Up around that.
Then there was another little place down there that did pottery too. They called Waldron. You know, there was Tesla, Carnegie, and Waldron. There's a little. That was just a smaller institution down there on the same canyon. But Carnegie, gee, they made beautiful stuff. They made plumbing fixtures, everything else, toilet bowls and basins, all kinds of stuff.
How many done?
They made the best fire brick in the world, you know, for high heat.
Yeah.
I know, I talked to a fellow, well, I told George Jackson, he says, you know, these marine brothers, every so often they get a change of fire brick in them. He says, them damn Tesla brick, he says, Carnegie brick would outlast anything they ever had.
Of course, good Tesla delight. And Carnegie were two different places.
Yeah, Tesla was coal.
Tesla was the coal mines, and Carnegie was the brickworks.
Brickworks.
Big brick kilns, yeah. And whatnot.
Yeah, I remember the old railroad out there. I remember just before they, about the last trip that went, the train went up there, they hauled a bunch of stuff up there for Kelly. Yeah.
Well, they used to run stages out of Livermore.
Oh, yeah.
Old horse-drawn stages.
Yeah. I tell you, used to drive those stages. One of them was Curtis Acker. And I think Ed used to drive one. So
Ed Callahan drove one for quite a few years.
I know Curtis drove. Curtis
McCumber.
Yeah, not McCumber. Curtis Acker.
Acker, yeah.
Yeah, I used to see them leave here. Yeah, it was quite a deal.
Well.
And then there was a, out here about where that's Quonset Hut is, where the Rodeo was, and there was a Dan Barry at a saloon there. First and last chance there.
I remember that. Yeah. And in fact, that's where we used to go to vote.
Yeah.
Well, that's it.